Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Should a Dubai company be able to own 20% of NASDAQ?
Sure. If they are considered to be safe, if they
That's
if they
it. Pass. Get Giuliani off the stage. He's finished. This is Michael Savage live. And I got to tell you something. You know, west of the Hudson River, Giuliani is seen for what he is. And I believe this man, the more he is seen for what he is, the lower his poll numbers are going to go. It's a disgrace, by the way, for me to listen to this, because there's no distinction between Rudy Giuliani and the entire Democrat machine on just so many social issues. But to hear the same thing coming out of his mouth that you'd expect from anyone inside the Beltway who is owned lock, stock, and barrel by these billionaire interests is really depressing. We're living in perplexing times. Let me put it to you that way. Everywhere I go, and right now I'm not in San Francisco. I've left the San Francisco area to get away from the filth, the psychic pollution and filth of disgusting human beings that have taken that city over lock, stock, and barrel. And I'm broadcasting to you live from Florida, a place that I happen to like. Things haven't changed very much. It's just hot and humid here. That's about it. But I remind myself as I look out the hotel window that God didn't make this land for condominiums. He made it for lizards, alligators, geckos, and birds. And so, therefore, there's no point in complaining about the weather. So here I am. What are the stories? What are you going to talk about today, Michael? Well, it's real easy. Let me begin in New York State. Democrat demagogue. New York governor gives licenses to illegal aliens by executive order. Now, I want to ask you something. Why is it that the minute a Democrat achieves power, they go for absolute power? Is it because he was absolutely corrupt before he achieved absolute power? Or is it that his quest for absolute power will yield absolute corruption? Spitzer should be arrested. The governor has done the undoable. He has said drop dead to everybody in New York State. He said drop dead to the legislature. And he said, I am now God, and I don't know anything about absolute power corrupts. I don't know anything about power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. All I know is I'm God, and I'll do what I want. He's breaking federal law. He should be arrested. U.S. Marshals should go in and put handcuffs on Elliot Spitzer and take him out and give him the perp walk. That's my opinion. Here are some other stories that intrigue me. The overt dictatorship of Hugo Chavez. Now, I'm going to talk today on the Savage Nation about dictatorships, both overt and covert. We know about the overt dictatorships of Hugo Chavez. Now that clown, that South American football-headed clown, wants to do away with alcohol in Venezuela. He's on a moral crusade. The dictator of Venezuela is on a moral crusade. As you well know, usually moralists of this nature are as corrupt as they come. He now is a monk. He's had a lot of time with the Muslims, particularly the Hitler of our time, the anti-Semite who God should kill any moment. If God was good, God would eliminate the earth from that Hitler from Iran. And all of his mullahs at the same time with a cruise missile into their beards and into their soup. So he visits South America. South America, a land with beautiful people. And the Hitler convinces Hugo Chavez that there should be no whiskey imports in Venezuela. He wants no beer in Venezuela. On top of that all, he wants ice cream eliminated in Venezuela because it's not good for the health of the Venezuelans. This is unbelievable to me, but that's an example of what happens with absolute dictatorship or overt dictatorship. But what I'm really concerned about is here in America is the covert dictatorship that is emerging in the Democrat Party primarily. For example, we have the covert dictatorship of Henry Waxman and the Democrats. Henry Waxman, I affectionately call Nostrilman, because most of you don't know one politician from another, but he's easy to recognize. He has the snout of a stuck pig. And I don't know why he has the snout of a stuck pig, but he has the snout of a stuck pig. He looks as though he's been snorting around in the wrong places, and his nostrils have been permanently enhanced, both in dimensions and in capacity. Henry Waxman wants to monitor opposition media. What I find interesting is that Henry Waxman has called for transcripts of Rush Limbaugh and others, but he's avoided Michael Savage. And I don't know whether to consider that a compliment or an insult. I'm not sure yet. But nevertheless, he is definitely on the road to a covert dictatorship. What he cannot win through the vote, he will do by fiat and by harassment. And so Democrats, wherever you turn, are moving towards increasing anti-democratic tendencies. The overt dictatorship of Hugo Chavez, the covert dictatorship of the Democrats, Spitzer spits on America. Spitzer is the New York governor who wants to give driver's licenses to non-citizens. They are illegal aliens. Question, why do you really oppose driver's licenses for illegals? The fact of the matter is, the apologists for the illegal aliens, those who benefit from the drug trade, those who benefit from the various and sundry trades that the illegal aliens are in, claim that there will be greater security if you give licenses to illegal aliens. They, you know, it's the same old argument we heard about, let's say, homosexuals and their nightclubs and their behavior, which is that unless you legalize bathhouses, you will drive it underground. Well, as far as I'm concerned, it never should have come out of the underground. The sewer is now overflowing around America. I've heard that argument every time the illegitimate want to either legalize or justify some of the most disgusting illegal behavior on earth. They tell you, well, it'll reduce the crime if you legalize. Of course it will. Why don't you just make homicide legal? Because that'll reduce the incidence of homicide. It won't be illegal anymore. And homicidal maniacs won't be criminals. Just legalize everything. Spitzer's plan for immigrant driver's licenses finds support, says Pinchy Sulzberger of the Old York Times. So he digs up some turncoats who says that we will actually be better off if illegal aliens are given licenses, you see. Now, I don't know their reasoning, but they say that they want people to be in the system because that's how you find them. That's according to a woman named Margaret Stock, who's shockingly an associate professor at West Point, who also works for the Army as an immigration lawyer. Now, how could she in the world argue that granting licenses, driver's licenses, to illegal aliens will put people in the system, and that's going to make it easy to find them? Let me ask you something, you moron, Mrs. Stock, Dr. Stock, whatever you are. What is going to prevent the illegal alien from getting multiple driver's licenses with multiple identities? The fact of the matter is it's going to increase insecurity in the country, not decrease it. As you well know, you can virtually have passports made up. Fake Social Security cards can be bought for $25 to $50. They are going to have multiple identities. But she goes on to say that, I find it disturbing that people who claim to be law and order types want to let hundreds of thousands of people run around the country without any oversight when there's a war going on. Well, Margaret, baby, there's another solution other than legalizing illegals, and that is to deport them from the United States of America, along with their apologists. We should get the buses running. We should use all of the RVs that were bought for Katrina that are no longer being used, and we should run a line of them from Albany to Quetzaltenango in Mexico. And we should fill them with illegal aliens. We should have a gigantic train running south from Albany to Mexico City of all of the RVs that were bought by the Republicans after Katrina that were never used and put them to good use. No, my friend, you don't reward criminality by making it legal. What you do is you make it even more illegal and you make the consequences even worse for the lawbreaker. So Governor Spitzer, I doubt that you're listening to the Savage Nation because a man like you wouldn't listen to anybody, let alone critics. You are a criminal. You should be arrested. You're no better than a common criminal. In fact, you're far worse than a common criminal. You're not only breaking the law by aiding and abetting illegal aliens, and by the way, New York state law is very clear on this. It requires a Social Security card or other form of certifiable identity to get a driver's license, and you're saying you're against New York state law and you are the governor of the state of New York? You, my friend, are mistaken if you think the people are going to buy this. But then, of course, you think you're above the people. All your life, you've had a silver spoon in your mouth, Spitzer. You had a very wealthy father who greased the skids for you, and now you think you basically can spit on the American people by first spitting on the people of New York. Question: should Spitzer be punished? Should Governor Spitzer be arrested for violating federal law? Should all federal funds to be halted into New York State until the program is stopped? There are other stories on the Savage Nation today, and some very, very good ones, as a matter of fact. One of my favorites is the fact that there was a debate today, and we had our first GOP debate with Fred Thompson. Now, as you know, I opened the show today with Rudy Giuliani, who immediately showed his true globalist stripes by saying that the NASDAQ stock exchange should be sold to our good friends in Dubai. So let's hear Giuliani again. I want you to get this right clear.
Yes or no, should a Dubai company be able to own 20% of NASDAQ?
Sure, if they are considered to be safe, if they pass.
Thanks, Rudy. Give him the hook because he's clearly not capable of being the United States president. Impossible to believe this man doesn't understand how horrible he sounds. He is so detached from reality that he thinks that by saying, sure, golly be gosh, sure, there are good people over there. Hey, I'm hearing it all over again. So what's the difference between Giuliani and the globalists in the Bush administration? Answer. One group comes from skull and bones, and the other group comes from a different ethnic background. But there is no difference. If you like George Bush, you're going to love Rudy Giuliani, by the way. However, I heard Fred Thompson today, and I do like what I heard. I called him the glue horse, not so affectionately, when he first appeared on the scene. But if it's a choice between the actor Thompson and the Clinton machine all over again, the same Clinton machine that gave us Osama bin Laden, that gave us 9/11, that gave us corruption, molestation, and moral degeneracy going to the level of making fellatio a norm amongst 13-year-old girls, then I'll take Fred Thompson. And believe me, I think Thompson can whip Hillary Clinton. She has high disapprovals amongst women. Women do not like Hillary Clinton. I'll tell you something again. She has very high negatives amongst women because women know women better than men know women. And the minute they see her, they don't like her. Now, the problem in America today is that we have too many tens of millions of illegal aliens who vote. We have tens of millions of deadbeat bums on welfare who do vote. I have said for years that if you're on public assistance, you should lose the right to vote. And the reason is very simple. If a demagogue such as Hillary Clinton comes along and says, I'm going to increase your benefits, I'm going to give you more free medical care, I'm going to give you higher welfare, I'm going to make your life a lot easier, of course the illegals who are on, the illegals and the welfare recipients are going to vote for her. It was predicted hundreds of years ago that when you give the vote to the very, very poor, you're going to eventually wind up with a dictatorship, and that's where we're moving in the United States of America today. Demagogues such as Hillary Clinton will promise anything to the masses to become elected and destroy the economy at the same time. Fred Thompson, on the other hand, I hope Fred Thompson is what he sounds like, because this fraudulent, straw-haired bum, Chris Matthews, who I detest, by the way, because he's a Democrat front man, and he always has been, and he is a loudmouth who doesn't let anybody debate with him because he won't debate anybody who can beat him. I don't know why the Republicans would subject themselves to more snotty nonsense by chicks in the form of Chris Matthews. But Thompson, when he was asked about the war on terror, answers in clip 41 the way I would have answered the question. Listen.
It is a global war. Islamic fascism has declared it upon us. They look
right
at it
on.
As something that's been going on for a long, long time, perfectly willing for it to go on for a long time more, killing millions of innocent people in the process. They play by no rules, and they are intent on bringing down Western civilization and the United States of America. So we have to understand what's necessary and the determination that we need to show to friend and foe alike that we'll do what's necessary to fight on any front that we have to fight on. Sometimes it's strange to me to think that the average 20-year-old serving us in Iraq knows more about what it takes for our national security than the average 20-year veteran on Capitol Hill.
Well, he has my vote. How about yours? I'll be right back. Savage. Extra, extra, hear all about it. Governor Spitzer spits on America, says drop dead to people of the state, drop dead to the legislature, and says, I am now the dictator, and you can shove it. I'm going to grant licenses to illegal aliens via executive order, meaning by fiat, meaning by dictatorship. Former president of Mexico says racists stop immigration. I guess he's speaking about himself, because in Mexico it's illegal to be an illegal alien. And they stop immigration from Guatemala, from El Salvador, from Nicaragua, and points south. So I guess the former president of Mexico saying that racists stop immigration has finally seen himself for what he is. That can be seen on michaelsavage.com. Also on my website, in order for you to really see the illness of liberalism, the sickness of San Francisco values, and the shallowness of Nancy Pelosi's Democrat Party, I have found new pictures of the degenerates in San Francisco, and I am going to broadcast them on michaelsavage.com. You will see the face, well, excuse me, the rear end of mental illness when you see what went on in the streets of this city during the so-called Folsom Street Fair that Nancy Pelosi said these values do not harm Christianity. And if you want more of naked, disgusting, degenerate, psychotic, sadomasochistic men and women, well, then vote for Democrats, because they don't stand for family values. They stand for freaks values. Other stories on michaelsavage.com include, well, what I just told you about. And, of course, there's a giant story from last week. Bush backs Mexico rapist murderer. International court seeks to block death penalty for a Mexican murderer. And George Bush has backed the international court, not the courts of the state of Texas. Now, what does that tell you about George W. Bush? Does that tell you he's a conservative? Or do you finally understand that he is a globalist, as I have been warning you?
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation live. Thank God. No, it's a live show. You know, I'm in Florida now, left at the sicko city of San Francisco. I mean, these guys are so sick. Annie Tusum Newsom should have cracked down. Nancy Pelosi should have cracked down. Instead, all we see are, go on michaelsavage.com. You'll see what I'm talking about. It's a very ill city. It's a mentally ill city that this passes for the norm. But I'm going to digress for a moment, because what we're doing here is reliving history all over again. As I've told you before, history goes around and around and around. And on the long plane ride out here last Friday, I had a chance to read history again in a small amount. And I stumbled upon ancient history. Now say, what does it have to do with naked men in San Francisco and politicians supporting them who claim to be good Christians? I looked up the period of ancient Rome and the Pharisees and the Essenes in that period of time. You may have heard something about it in the dim past if you have any religious education whatsoever. I would think that Catholics would know more about this than most other religious people, because it's probably taught in Catholic school. But you see, in the past, there were various sects of Jews, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Essenes. And some would say that a new Jewish sect arose called Christianity. Some would take offense at that, but they're usually ignoramuses. The fact of the matter is that Jesus was Jewish. It's a fact that any Christian scholar will acknowledge. And rather than arguing over things of that nature, the important thing is to understand that when we say Judeo-Christian civilization, there's a real meaning for it. But if you go back further than that, you will find that the Jews themselves were arguing amongst themselves, and there were two divisions within the ancient Jews, between the pro-Hellenist Jews and the anti-Hellenist Jews. What do I mean by Hellenist? The pro-Hellenist Jews would be the equivalent of liberal Jews in the United States of America today who say anything goes. They're for gay marriage. They are for medical marijuana. They're for all sorts of debauchery. And they say that it's all good because they're liberal and they believe in tolerance. They would have been the pro-Hellenist Jews of ancient times. The anti-Hellenist Jews would have been the traditionalists who did not want to go by the way of the Hellenists, meaning the Greeks. They didn't want to go like the way of San Francisco today. They said no to this kind of perversion. And so there was a great fight, and it went on for a long period of time. So if you say that this is new, the argument between traditionalists, and let us say the degenerates today, I would call them. I wouldn't call them pro-Hellenist. I call them degenerate sickos who belong in a nut house or a prison cell. But then I'm a little different than you might think in that regard. I wouldn't call them pro-Hellenist when they beat each other up in the street with whips and the city fathers, I should say the city freaks, look the other way. A city is supposed to maintain a certain degree of decorum and civility. And when it can no longer do so, it does not have a government. It has anarchy. And whenever there is anarchy, you will have this kind of behavior. That's what we have now, is governmental anarchy in San Francisco. Okay? So you could be lenient, you can be tolerant, you can be liberal, and you could understand that by being so, you're opening the door up to an endless cascade of sickness, degeneracy, to the point where your own religion will be destroyed, and you will be made illegal. That religion itself will be outlawed. So there are various branches of ancient Judaism, and they fought with each other over whether to be more like the Greeks or less like the Greeks. In other words, more like the pagans or more like the monotheists is what it comes down to. But again, if you look into it, if you want to know more about it, I mean, you can read more about it, just as the Essenes represented the extreme left of the ancient Jews, the extreme right was represented by another group. There was leniency, and then there were traditionalists. To the extreme right of the Pharisees were the Sadducees. They did not believe in immortality or resurrection. They denied the existence of the hereafter. So even amongst the ancient Jews, just as then today, there are arguments. Do we believe in the hereafter? Well, some do and some don't. Do we believe in resurrection? Some do and some don't. Is there a hereafter? Is there immortality? Is there resurrection? Some Jews thought there were, and some Jews thought there weren't, and they argued over it for hundreds of years. What's amazing to me is that just as the Sadducees, and I may be mispronouncing it, you'll have to forgive me, S-A-D-D-U-C-E-E-S, if I remember correctly, just as they represented the right wing of the many Jewish religious sects, so the Essenes represented the extreme left. So if you think that we are divided politically today, you are right. But we also are divided on a religious level in the United States of America. We are divided within Judaism, we're divided within Christianity, and I would only hope there was a greater division within the Muslim world than the one I see emerging. But we'll go into that at another time. But I want you to understand that in addition to these three main sects of Judaism, there was a fourth that was added in the third decade of the first century AD, namely the Christian sect, its founder being Jesus. Now, you may say, well, it was a totally different religion, and it has become so, but it wasn't then. And I'm going to leave you with one last point on the ancients. And that is the fact that an ancient Jewish sect developed elaborate purification rites, one of which was baptism. Do you know that? That baptism is actually a Jewish custom of one of the sects of Judaism? You don't know that. We think when you say baptism that it's strictly for the Baptists, a sect of Christians, and it is not. It was developed in ancient times by the Essenes. Like the Pharisees, the Essenes believed in the immortality of the soul. They believed in resurrection. And they believed in the concept of a Messiah. That's correct. And the Essenes also believed in the punishment of the wicked in an everlasting hell. They believed in the reward for the good in heaven, and they developed baptism, that is, immersion in water for the remission of sins or a rebirth into a new life. So, again, ladies and gentlemen, there are great divisions today politically. There were great divisions in the world in ancient times, both in the religious world and the political world. And there will always be divisions, both religious divisions and political divisions. It's never going to come together where everybody sees the world the same way. It never has, and it never will. I'm trying to tell you that. But you have to decide whether the vileness that you see in San Francisco, the lawlessness that you see in New York State under Eliot Spitzer, the new dictator, the Hugo Chavez of New York, is something that you want emerging or something that you want repressed. Because make no mistake about it, societies come and go. And it's very difficult to maintain civility in a society when you have dictators like Governor Spitzer, who says, drop dead to the people of New York State. I'll do what I want. You can go to heck because I'm a billionaire son and I can buy you and sell you 1,000 times over. That is not very good for democracy. It's irrespective of whether he's a Democrat. In this case, he is. And in San Francisco, do you want naked men with leather beating each other up in the street with whips and chains? Do you want a woman hanging in a cage outside a church mocking the church? Well, then if you do, then you are voting for the death of civilization. I, on the other hand, am no saint. I've told you that 1,000 times. But I want to live in a civilized society. I don't want to live in a degenerated society. I also want a relative democracy. I don't want a dictatorship. If you want a dictatorship, then I suggest that you go to Venezuela. Because in Venezuela, as I said to you earlier, Hugo Chavez, the dictator of Venezuela, who has done one dictatorial thing after another, closed down opposition newspapers, closed down opposition TV stations, closed down opposition radio stations, exactly what Hillary Clinton wants to do, he's done. And strangely enough, the good liberal actor, Sean Penn, who has never met a dictator he didn't like, he loved Saddam Hussein, he loved Ahmadinejad in Iran, he has an affinity, an attraction almost, an attraction for dictators, Sean Penn. I don't know what that is psychologically or what it means, nor do I care. I am not a psychiatrist. But Sean Penn has not met a dictator he has disliked, so far as I can tell. He only hates America. That's all we know. So Chavez goes on national television and starts to preach against the vice of drinking. Chavez, all of a sudden, the dictator, has a moral crusade in Venezuela. He wants to discontinue beer. He wants to create a new man. He wants to get rid of alcohol, no booze. Apparently, his psychotic little friend in elevator shoes from Iran has influenced him. And now he wants to get rid of whiskey. And as I say, into the picture enters Sean Penn. Listen to this because you're not going to believe this. In clip five, this is Sean Penn speaking about the dictator Hugo Chavez.
I came here looking for a great country. I found a great country. I found great hospitality. I would be more specific than all of this, but I'm also here as a journalist, and so
hold it, Sean Penn, journalist. Sean, how's the dope there, Sean? And how's the snow? Is it snowing in Venezuela? Did it snow heavily while you were down there? Are you kidding me? Well, wait a minute. I take it back. You actually do represent the new breed of journalists. That's right. Excuse me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
As the world turns here in the Savage Nation, we've got the dictator of Venezuela saying he wants to outlaw whiskey. He's in a new moral campaign. Of course, he left his wife and children, that bum. You know, the mark of a man is a man who raises his family, not who abandons his family. But, you know, these moralists really amaze me. Then you got the great actor, Sean Penn, going down there. He's never met a dictator he hasn't fallen in love with, whether it be Saddam Hussein or Ahmadinejad. Now his latest love is Hugo Chavez. And again, of course, he's a good liberal. And here in America, we have got the Democrat demagogue Spitzer saying that by fiat, meaning by executive order, he's going to grant licenses to illegal aliens. And it goes on and on and on. But I try to put it in a historic context to a certain extent and try to tell you that many of you are perplexed right now. I know this. I know it from talking to people. People are very nervous right now. They're afraid. They don't know what's going to, you know, come tomorrow. And it's more so these days than it was, you know, let's say years ago. But, you know, I got to tell you younger people something. A lot of guys don't want to get married. They say they're afraid for the future. Well, you know, that is the most wussy, punky thing I've ever heard. You're telling me that your great-grandfather, let us say he was in Europe, had a secure life. He knew what was coming the next day. There was no democracy. There were dictatorships, yet they had families. Why? Because they were men. They didn't walk around with gelled hair looking to have an orgasm and think that they were a man. Yeah, I mean, really, think about it. Well, you're telling me that in Ireland or during the Irish potato famine, your great-great-great-great-grandfather didn't have children because he was afraid that they'd starve? He had children. Not because he was afraid of being punished in the next world, but because he knew it was the mark of civilization and manhood to have a family and to raise that family. And yet you look at the guys today, they don't have the guts to stick out of marriage, to stick with a woman. So really you could say, well, the times really aren't a changing. They're sure they're changing in the specific, but not in general. They've always been insecure. When I was a kid, we jumped on the desks expecting a nuclear exchange any minute. You know, duck and cover. We had to jump under the desk. Somehow everybody I knew got married, except for the guys who went to Fire Island on the weekend. But they're not here anymore. That was their choice. They all got married. They weren't afraid to get married and try to have a family. Why, times were more secure then than they are now? Nonsense. It's that you're a narcissist, you're an egomaniac, and you're a wuss. That's why you won't find a woman and get married, is what I like to say. But you won't listen anyway. You think it's all a joke. So now we got the problems. Sure, we have problems, but they'll be resolved. There will always be division. There will always be strife. There'll always be a tug of war between one faction and another, whether it is political or religious. And this will go on forever. But I didn't finish my story about the ancient sects of Judaism, the three sects. I know many of you don't have sects on your mind. You have sex on your mind. But when you look at the three ancient sects of Judaism and how they tugged at each other, some to the extreme left, some to the extreme right, and what they represented, and what it is that they wanted to happen. The fact of the matter is you got to understand that it all changed eventually, and they all drew together. The Jews all drew together. Do you know why? Because the ranks of the first two of these sects created another sect called the Zealots. And the Zealots, by the way, in the beginning, were a very small minority group. They were strongest in Galilee, where they were responsible for the first Jewish uprising against Rome, which took place in 6 AD. But it was a very small group of people, the Zealots. Then the Romans did something very foolish. They suppressed the Zealots ruthlessly. And what happened is the ranks of the Zealots swelled exponentially. The Jewish-Roman conflict forced all of the liberal Jews and the other sects of Jews to join together with the Zealots together because of the atrocities of the Romans. The Romans, who had no skill in diplomacy, no feeling for social amenities, were very much like the Democrats of today. And they compounded mistakes with cruelty, the ancient Romans. And they had a vision of statesmanship that could be defined as there was no problem which could not be solved by violence. And they believed that any idea that threatened the Roman hegemony, would die when a man's head was severed from his shoulders. And so these atrocities in those ancient days forced more and more Pharisees, Sadducees, and Essenes to join the ranks of the Zealots, who were then preaching total war against the Romans. My prediction is, eventually, after the Islamo-fascists continue to damage the West, and as the perverts in this country continue to rip the social fabric and to destroy the hearts and minds of our children, we will all become zealots. All of us will eventually unite against these forces of evil. The forces of evil within, from the degenerates, and the forces of evil from without in the Islamo-fascist world. Eventually, all Americans will become zealots. That's what will happen, is my prediction. When is a question of for someone else to answer. But let me get back to the basics here, the politics. I don't want to get too far off course because many of you are used to radio talk shows that are a little simpler than this, which is left, right, up, down, Democrat, Republican, blah, blah, blah. I don't do that. I do what I do, they do what they do, and the twain shall never meet. I read an editorial in the New York Times that is so sophomoric, I had to cut it out. Since I'm traveling, I don't have access to computers, really. I don't use it like I did at home. So I'm reading the paper in the hotel room. It actually was fun again to smell the ink and get the hands black. And I see this editorial that is so sophomoric, I have to read it to you. End of an era in arts funding. Philip Morris, a diverse corporation now known as Altria, is one of the big tobacco companies and the maker of Marlboro cigarettes. For some 40 years, it has also generously supported the arts in New York, support that is now coming to an end, they write. Altria is decentralizing its operations and moving its headquarters out of New York, and it has spun off its international tobacco division so that it can create a new smokers elsewhere. We've always hated the basic product that Philip Morris sells, which has harmed millions of smokers and non-smokers at immense cost. We've also admired its diverse and relatively unfearful support of the arts. So in other words, they hate the product, but they'll take the money, as good little liberals will do. Then they say, there is no disputing its generosity, even though we shuddered at how easily large amounts of cash can buy neutrality and eventually respectability in a very influential part of the community. Now, of course, they're talking about themselves. They are the influential part of the community, meaning the perverts who are so-called artistes. Now, real artists don't take grants, by the way. They wouldn't qualify for one. They probably would never apply for one. But false artists, of course, live for grants and go to the parties where they can get grants. So now they're all disturbed that Philip Morris, who they attacked mercilessly, Big Tobacco, who they attacked mercilessly, has finally given him the middle finger and is leaving, and they're not supporting the arts, and they don't know what to do. So the New York art world has a very large hole to fill. You talk about Freudian slip there. The New York art world now has a very large hole to fill, excuse me, but that's almost obscene, in its budget. A hole it is used to filling with a single check from a single donor, meaning Philip Morris. This will create serious problems, writes Pinchy Sulzberger, unless other corporations, less ethically compromised, we hope, make up the difference. Oh, boy. This is unbelievable to me. And then they try to, listen to this. It would be a wise corporation that saw the chance now to step in and take the place of a company whose support for the arts has become a byword. This is unbelievable to me. I've never seen anything like this. You know, the New York Times was once a great newspaper, and it has become virtually what it is today because the political bias has led to the hiring of the sophomoric kids who can't even write. So they'll take the money, but they won't take the product. Is that it? Maybe they should go to Hugo Chavez or Ahmadinejad. They can get a grant from him.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is a global war. Islamic fascism has declared it upon us. They look at it as something that's been going on for a long, long time, perfectly willing for it to go on for a long time more, killing millions of innocent people in the process. They play by the rules.
Hold it right there. You're listening to Fred Thompson, who is definitely on the right track. He's using the correct phrase, Islamic fascism. And at least he's saying it like it is, unlike Giuliani, who you'll hear in the next clip today, showing himself to be the globalist that he's always been, the New York social liberal that he has never changed being. Listen to Giuliani today when caught off guard by the moderator. Go ahead.
Yes or no? Should a Dubai company be able to own 20% of NASDAQ?
Sure. If they are.
All right. That's the end of the story. Give them the hook. Sure. Just like that, Rudy. So in other words, if someone had asked you about the Dubai ports deal, you would say, sure, Dubai should have been able to take over the security at our ports, Rudy, as long as the right amount of money was flowing and your security company could provide security. Rudy, let me tell you something. You're not playing west of the Hudson River. You're not liked west of the Hudson River. You are seen as a New York City, you know, liberal mayor, which is what you are. You are anti-gun. You're pro-homosexual marriage. You're probably for greater taxation. And most Americans know that. Thompson, on the other hand, while he is an actor, has been an actor, politically is more in resonance with the American people than any of the Republican candidates. Moreover, I'll ask you a question. Here's the question for you today. Of the three major Republican candidates, who can defeat Hillary? I don't believe that Romney can defeat Hillary because he is too middle of the road. I'm pretty sure Giuliani and Hillary are almost identical. They probably have the same dressmaker, so I don't think he could defeat her. I think Thompson can easily destroy her in a debate. Moreover, I'll tell you something else. Women don't like Hillary. I told you that. And I'll tell you something else. Women will not elect a woman as president of the United States of America. We are not England, and we're not ready for a woman president. No matter how they delude themselves, in a time of terror, in a time like this, they want a strong male presence. Even Democrats want a strong male presence. I'm not talking about the party apparatchiks in the Democrat Party. I'm talking about people who define themselves as Democrat. They're not voting for a woman simply because she thinks she should be president. I personally think Thompson can defeat her. And I'd like to see how he continues to develop as a candidate. We have other topics in play here on the Savage Nation, where I'm live from Florida. WFTL in Fort Lauderdale has been kind enough to host me. I am stuffed with a turkey sandwich and pizza. I always overeat when I come to a radio station. It's just, there's something about the smell of rotting pizza in a garbage can and an old sandwich on a table with drippy mayonnaise that inspires a good host. And I don't know how else to describe it. It brings back the old days of radio. The people down here are really nice. I've always liked coming down here. We're also talking about overt and covert dictatorships. We know about overt dictatorships such as Hugo Chavez. Now Chavez, who has eliminated opposition newspapers, eliminated opposition TV stations, seizing private property, Hugo Chavez now is on a moral crusade, and he's going to ban alcohol and ice cream. Now, this is a man who left his wife and children to be a better zealot, or shall I say a better dictator. You see, not all zealots are dictators, nor are all dictators zealots. The word zealot, as I described in the last hour, has a very specific meaning that many people don't understand. I told you that there were three sects of Judaism, and they were all at each other's throats. So let's just say they all disagree with each other. Some were liberal sects, there were three sects, okay? Pharisees, Sadducees, and Essenes. And there was the left, right, and center in ancient Judaism. And they disagree with each other. Some were very liberal. In other words, they would have liked men whipping each other in the streets to be like Greeks. They would be liberal Jews from San Francisco saying that they're tolerant and that it doesn't matter to them. In fact, they probably would have engaged in naked wrestling in the court of the temple, because that's what ancient Jews did. The more and more they became like Greeks, the less and less they became like ancient Jews. And so they said, what's wrong with that? And eventually they became like the Greeks, wrestling naked in the temples. That would be the liberal sect of Judaism. Then, of course, there was the center, and then there was the right, the Sadducees. They were to the extreme right of the Pharisees. And what I'm getting at is they all disagree with each other on how they should be Jews. But eventually they all drew together. And they drew together on the first, it was a very small sect called the Zealots. Very small sect of fanatic warrior traditionalists called the Zealots, strongest in the Galilee. First Jewish uprising against Rome was conducted by the Zealots. But there were not too many people in the ranks of the Zealots. The Romans ruthlessly suppressed that rebellion. But the cause was not suppressed. It smoldered and it smoldered and it smoldered. And as it smoldered, the ranks of the Zealots swelled. And as the Romans became increasingly atrocious, and as they continued to inflict atrocities on the Jewish people, and as they continued to show that they had no skill in diplomacy, and as they continued to compound mistakes with cruelty, and as they continued to believe that when a man disagrees with Rome, his head should be cut off, because then his ideas would die with him. This stupidity and these stupid atrocities of the ancient Romans forced more and more of the Pharisees, Sadducees, and Essenes to join the ranks of the Zealots, who were now preaching total war against the Romans. And what I'm telling you in this long, or let's say short version of history, is that there have always been divisions, religious divisions, in all religions, and there have always been political divisions. But eventually, I said in the last hour, one day in America, we will all be zealots. We will all become zealots because the perversion in this country is a war upon our children. It's a war upon our values. It's a war upon the very fabric of society itself. Look at michaelsavage.com. Go on the website and see the sickness of men naked in the street, whipping each other in the streets, not being arrested, because we have anarchy. We have government anarchy under any Twosome Newsome, the sad sack of a mayor, who Nancy Pelosi will no longer be photographed with. Never mind Hillary Clinton. She came to town and would not be photographed with that loser, any Twosome Newsome. Because they recognize the American people are disgusted by this behavior. And they eventually, even the liberals amongst the Democrats, will come to understand that a society cannot survive that permits this kind of perversity in the streets. But the bigger problem will be the Islamofascist. We are told by the security agencies that it's not a matter of if, but when we are hit with a dirty bomb or something along those lines. That's very comforting, isn't it? To spend trillions of dollars and be told that they can't stop them. Well, I could stop them. You give me 6 months, I can give you a 99th percentile of surety that I could stop them. I could stop them with deportation. I could stop them by kicking in doors. And I could stop them with internment camps if necessary. I guarantee you I could stop terrorism in this country. I don't want to hear any more crap about civil rights, because without survival rights, there will be no civil rights. There'll only be dead people in the streets. And then you could take your civil rights and shove them up your marijuana pipe. Eventually, we will all be zealots. I predict that. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. This is the Savage Nation. Those are some of the topics I am interested in. What are you interested in? What are you interested in? Let's start in Houston, Texas. Siddiqui is an imam. That is a Muslim religious man who is probably in charge of a congregation of Muslims who are probably as desirous of the American dream as you are. Siddiqui, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Dr. Savage. Yeah, I just wanted to say that the same kind of history we're talking about between the Orthodox and the liberal Jews is the exact same story that's playing out in the Muslim community right now. And so as we see people resulting to terrorism and acts of violence, because they go so extreme on the right, the fear is always, like you say, if you act too liberally and let people do whatever they want, you see what happens in San Francisco. So it's always a hard balance, and the Muslim community is just learning how to deal with that balance right now. And the same.
Right. Well, when I see naked men whipping each other in the streets and calling it a fair, and the politicians permit this and do not condemn it, the church says nothing, I realize that the society, if continued to permit to drift in this direction, will dissolve altogether into total debauchery, depravity, and cruelty. And that is why I say that in a way, in a strange way, the religion of Islam, as long as it does not become violent, will be a salvation in a certain way for this country. Because if you're given a choice between a slut puking on herself on Sunset Boulevard showing the center of her legs in a car, or a woman walking around modestly dressed, I think that most Americans have had enough of the vermin on Sunset Boulevard, wouldn't you say?
I agree. Now, the problem that you have is in most Muslim societies, they didn't want to risk the chance of letting their people have the freedoms to explore, so they maintain somewhat strict organizations, such as clothing, and you see in Saudi Arabia with women driving. But, you know, those aren't necessarily religious values. They've just enforced them on their society.
No, that's interesting you say that, because I know that the burqa is not required by Islam. That's an add-on that is not even found in the Quran. There are many things we are hearing that is Islamic that are not Islamic practices whatsoever. They were created out of whole cloth by ignoramuses who are virtual apostates to their own religion and don't even know that. And so, therefore, I thank you for calling the program. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Susan in Chicago. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi. You epitomize a zealot. Is that what?
Well, thank you for the compliment. I appreciate that. And so you epitomize the opposite. Is that it?
Do I epitomize the opposite? Now, that's a strange word. I epitomize.
Well, wait. Which part of that was a strange word? Do? Is it you? Epitomize or the opposite? Which of those words is strange?
Opposite. What is the opposite of a zealot?
You tell me. You're saying I'm a zealot, so what are you?
I'm a freedom seeker, you might say.
Oh, and what would that be? What would a freedom seeker like? Would a freedom seeker like, let us say, let's take the political issues of the day. The governor of New York knows that the people do not want driver's licenses granted to illegal aliens. He knows that he could not get it through the legislature. So he says he will do this by executive order. Is that freedom loving?
The executive order laws are the executive order laws. The same with the national...
No. Answer the question. Are you in favor of granting driver's licenses to illegal aliens, even though the people of the state oppose it? Which side are you on that issue?
There's no yes or no answer to it.
Well, then you don't know what you're talking about. What you're doing is you're telling me that you don't know what you're for, but you know what I'm not. And that is that I'm not you.
That you are from the 60s, we would have been a nuclear exploded, scorched earth.
Lady, you're obviously a red diaper doper baby. You're obviously raised by a very left-wing, if not outright socialist, communist group of parents. And you are hopelessly lost. It is women like you who will destroy this country. And I don't even think a woman like you knows what you're talking about. You are not a freedom-loving person. You are exactly what George Orwell described when he said that the more he hears people screaming freedom, 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 the louder he hears their chains rattling. Have a nice day and don't call me again, because women like you lower the IQ of my show. Don't even listen to me. I suggest you go listen to NPR, where you'll hear the kind of rubbish and drivel that you were raised on. I'll be right back. And then we got a moral crusade in Venezuela. And isn't it interesting that the man who's moralizing, Hugo Chavez, has banned opposition newspapers, banned opposition television stations, seized private property, and now wants to ban alcohol in Venezuela. I find it interesting that he's the moralist of our time. By the way, he left his wife and children, but you wouldn't want to know that, because the media doesn't want you to know that he's such a wonderful loser. Then you got Vicente Fox of Mexico going on CNN yesterday, telling us that we must have illegal immigration and we're racist if we don't. And then he says that only racists oppose immigration. Of course, that means he's a racist, because Mexico is much stricter on illegal immigration than we are. In fact, Mexico has troops on the border with Guatemala specifically to keep Guatemalans out of Mexico. And of course, Mexican police kill illegal immigrants who they find in the mountains of Mexico. Ask any El Salvadoran who came through Mexico sneaking into America. They'll tell you the stories that they had to hide from the Mexicans, who beat them up or killed them if they did not pay bribes. You ask them. So don't tell me that we're a racist nation. We are the most benevolent nation on planet Earth. And for a guy like Vicente Fox to have the audacity to come here, but then again, who show does he go on? He goes on CNN, a showplace for liberal idiocy, and lectures us without any commentary that makes sense from the so-called interviewer. Listen to clip 18. Listen to the big lie.
All those who come here do it because of hunger, or because they don't have nothing to eat. They just want to upgrade themselves, and that's what my grandfather
did. Let's stop right there. I don't want to hear about your grandfather, okay? Let's start with the lie. They all come here because they're hungry. Well, that means that men like Vicente Fox were failures or corrupt, that his people should go hungry while he spent $25,000 for bedroom drapes. So don't blame me for the fact that your people are hungry, senor. They're hungry, senor, because you are a pig. You're a grosso. That's why they're hungry, because you spent $12,000 for bedroom drapes, man. And they want to better themselves. Well, that we agree on. And if you can better yourself by drug dealing, you can better yourself by smuggling, if you can better yourself by rape, why not, man? If you're coming to a nation of wimps and wusses and perverts and degenerates and liberals, you can get away with virtual murder. And the minute anybody speaks out and says, not in my country, not in my backyard, you've got a willing echo chamber on CNN, NBC, ABC, to call those who stand up for their own nation and their own human dignity as racists. So, senor, you've got a good racket going there. Keep it up. You're doing a very good job for the big lie. And Vicente Fox, I want to remind you that a predecessor of yours said that if you tell a big lie often enough, it will become the truth. So keep on lying, baby. Keep on telling those of us who know that illegal immigrants are not all coming here to work. Keep calling us names.
Savage.
I'm not claiming for open borders to everybody. What I'm claiming for is a decision, an intelligent decision with a vision to the future, because United States needs that energy to be competitive in front of Asia and China, and it's a must. So let's do it orderly, let's plan ahead, and let's administrate.
All right, you heard that. In other words, Vicente Fox, the former dictator of Mexico, is telling us how we should conduct our nation. And, of course, he's doing it on an echo chamber called CNN without any competing ideas, because you know they're for open borders and for the death of America as you know it. That's what CNN stands for, the dissolution of our borders, language, and culture. And so they invite these tin pot dictators on the show, or the specialty of shows and guests that you would see on CNN would be those who encumber the rest of us in this country, for example. The weak, the diseased, and the fools. In other words, the rest of us struggle with the encumbered of society, and we pay the tab. And so you see the weak, the diseased, and the fools paraded across the screens of CNN, ABC, CBS, and NBC on a regular basis. Rarely do you see the patriot. Rarely do you see the healthy. Rarely do you see the successful. Instead, you see only those who would bring the society further down. And so that is why we listen to a man like Vicente Fox, who was as corrupt as they come. There was a big scandal when he became the president of Mexico. He spent tens of thousands of dollars on drapes. There were excesses beyond comprehension. He lived like a king. And yet he comes here and lectures us about the poor. I mean, it's unbelievable to me that he gets away with it, because the folks in the media don't have any collective memory whatsoever. They don't know anything about what they're talking about. They're there basically as stooges. So they don't even know how to ask an intelligent question, except to a conservative for whom they bring out the long knives. Now, what do I mean when I say to you that society is encumbered by the weak, the diseased, and the fools? Go on to michaelsavage.com, and I want you to see the disease, the mentally diseased, of San Francisco. You'll see the pictures of the so-called Folsom Street Fair, with men whipping each other in the streets while onlookers take pictures of them. You'll see men dressed up as women, dressed up as sicko sissies. You will see people in cages, in metal cages. You'll see a man on the street being stepped on by another man. You will see a man kissing another man's boot in the street. In my day, these people would have been beaten up with billy clubs by the cops and arrested, and then they would have been put on Thorazine or whatever the drug was of that time and put in mental hospitals, hopefully until they were made somewhat straight. But in this city, this is the norm. The norm of the city is now the warped, and the straight are now considered warped. In other words, we're living in an upside-down Alice in Wonderlandian world, and consequently, we the people are reeling. The church leaders were silent while the churches were being mocked. The so-called city fathers, the city metrosexuals, were silent during this. You got to look at the pictures of the sickos on michaelsavage.com to understand what I'm saying. One picture is worth 1,000 sickos. That's all I can tell you. So you say, well, why are you glorifying it? I am going to keep running these pictures until America wakes up to how sick and how morally degenerate America really is. And then you'll understand that you have a clear choice coming up in the election. And that choice, I think, has to be a conservative versus a socialist liberal. Hillary is the socialist liberal who has been chosen. She has practically been anointed by the liberal media. And make no mistake about it, she is a socialist of the Leninist variety, and she is clearly a political a leftist. No matter how she tries to reinvent herself, she is what she is. You could see the tendencies within the Democrat Party already. Governor Eliot Spitzer elbowed his way into the governorship. The son of a billionaire bought the position with money. As you know, in America, with money you can buy anything, including a governorship. And when I say buy it, I mean, he had enough money to spend on his own campaign to virtually hoodwink enough people to become governor. And that's what our presidency is becoming. And thus far, we see no discussion of platform. All we see is who raised more money. As I said to you last week, it's amazing to me that the candidates are now being talked about not as to what they stand for, but how much money they raised the week before. And just as we once had movie reviewers, but we don't have them anymore, now we just have people that report on how much money a movie grossed over the weekend. We now hear Hillary outgrossed Obama over the weekend, 12 million to 8. And coming up on the other side, were the Republicans who only grossed 3 million and 2 million respectively. And that's their idea of a campaign. That's because the politicians and the journalists are as shallow as each other. And so the only hope for this country would be a true, true conservative candidate. I'm hopeful that Fred Thompson, who I had no faith in whatsoever, turns out to be that man. Thus far, what I heard today, I like. And I hope it's not just rhetoric, because I think he can smash her over an anvil during a debate. In a time like this, where people are perplexed, they're not going to vote for a socialist woman. They're just not going to go for it. They would pick a strong male figure, no matter how he'd be attacked by the liberal media. I'll tell you right now, he could beat her. Giuliani cannot beat her because he's too liberal. Romney, I had hopes for until I realized that he was an owner of the company involved with the sale of the 3Com computer company, which I told you about last week on the show last Thursday. When he was involved in the venture capital, Bain Capital Partners, if I remember correctly, was one of the original founders or creators of that company. And he was, I guess, involved in the sale or the desire to sell that company to the communist Chinese. So far, I haven't heard him say he isn't. I have no faith in him. Any man who could have been a governor of Massachusetts, an extremely left-wing state for this long, is obviously capable of virtually saying and doing anything. So I'm not really enamored of him. Right now, to me, I'm very much interested in what Thompson says, because he cleared up the air today. He cleared the air on the issue of security. He called them Islamofascists. He called them Islamic fascists, and he said they started the war and they declared war on us. And he's 100% right. He's 100% right. So we're living in dangerous times. Now you got to hear this piece from Thompson on so-called free trade. As we all know, free trade is not free. Someone's paying for it, and it's not the billionaires who fired you. I mean, you could hear all you want about free trade, and we got to remain competitive, but you got to ask yourself, the guy who just bought his fifth Gulfstream 5 after firing 35,000 workers and transferring the plant to the hinterland of China, he's not for free trade. He's for slave labor. He's not for free trade or open markets. He's for the transfer of America's capital, the wealth of a nation, to his own pockets. He's a pirate, in other words. He may not be wearing an eye patch and a man of war, but he is a pirate. He may be a pirate in a Gucci suit, but he's a pirate. He may be a pirate, not in a pirate ship, but in a Gulfstream 5, but he's a pirate. He may speak corporatese when he goes on CNBC, but he's a pirate. And we're going to need real strong patriots to stop these pirates and the piracy of the American labor force and of the American enterprise. So let's listen to Thompson in clip 35.
Free and fair trade has been good for America, responsible for millions of jobs in this country. We cannot turn our back on that. I was one of the strictest advocates of imposing restrictions on the Chinese for their behavior in terms of exporting dangerous materials to other countries and tying some of our trade policies to what they did in that regard. They have still not done enough. They have devalued their currency, which puts them in a favored position as far as our manufacturers are concerned. But in terms of turning our back on free trade, that's not the direction to go in. It's meant too much for our country, and every country in the history of the world that's ever turned its back on free trade has suffered for it as a consequence.
All right, so he was equivocating on that one. He gave a yes and a no answer. He was basically saying we have to crack down on China for exporting dangerous products. Nobody would argue with that. But again, he's a free trader globalist, and perhaps all of them are, and there's nothing you can do about that. I would give him a zero on that answer. But what about taxation? We know that Hillary will raise probably double taxes if, God forbid, she should win. I don't mean overnight. It would take her about 16 or 18 years to do that. But then again, if Hugo Chavez can get away with a lifetime presidency, why can't his good friend the Clinton family get away with it? And after all, why not get rid of these messy, wasteful things called elections? You know, just be a dictator for as long as you can, like Caligula. So Thompson doesn't like taxation. Now we'll play one more Thompson clip, and that would be clip 39.
The AMT was designed for to target the rich guy. And when the Democrats start targeting the rich guy, if you're a middle-class guy, you ought to run to the other side of the House because you're going to get hit. They're not going to be on target. What we're going to have to do, though, is look at this as a part of a total picture. Generally speaking, lower taxes and lower tax rates grow the economy. It's been proven in the 20s. It was proven during the Kennedy administration, proven during the Reagan administration, and again during this administration. I would apply that same principle to the AMT. It ought to be phased out.
So he says the alternate minimum tax should be phased out. And the liberals don't want that at all. But we won't go into taxation right now because it's too complicated for the average person. And so, therefore, we will avoid that. By and large, he's the only candidate at this time that I can honestly say stands for anything I believe in. Now let's go back to some of the earlier topics that I raised here on the Savage Nation. Let us go to Norm in New York City on WOR. Norm, thanks for holding. You're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, sir. You raised a very interesting point between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. These people were always in conflict, and the Zealots, they started off as knife men, Sakhanin. And they saw a Pharisee was getting too close to the Greeks, doing Greek things, they would knife him. And these people, as you said, they eventually grew, and because the Romans cracked down upon them. But this didn't end when the Jewish Commonwealth was destroyed by the Romans. This kept going on because of the Bible. Look at the 1920s with the Sykes monkey trials. There was the same exact battle between the Sadducees. Let's keep our religion. Let's look inward. And the Pharisees, hey, it's a big world out there. Let's look at science. Let's believe in that. And there it was, right there, 1922. They don't want to have...
That's what I was saying, which is that there has always been political division. There's always been religious division. And there always will be religious and political division. I've said that. So there's not going to be a day that we all draw together, except when this country is attacked by the Islamofascists. I would say we will all become zealots. Otherwise, we cannot survive. Just as the Jews drew together and stopped fighting amongst themselves when they were attacked by the Romans, we will draw together as Americans have to draw together, just as we drew together in World War II, by and large. I don't think people understand that in the 1930s, there were liberals who said that we should not enter any war. Germany meant peace. They were not out to get us, blah, 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 blah. And that all changed after Pearl Harbor when we all became zealots because most families sent husbands or sons or brothers to fight Hitler and to fight the Japanese Imperialist Army. And so, therefore, hopefully this won't happen, but I don't see it not happening. I see it do happening. What about you?
It's going to be happening. And I also have to disagree with the Muslim man you had before. He compared himself to the Jews, which is incorrect. The Jews never wanted to convert and never wanted to have a giant empire. They were inward.
But I don't want to attack Siddiqui, who called and said that the Muslims are arguing it out right now. I believe that is true. I believe that they are arguing as to how modern they should become or how retro they should become. And I believe that that argument eventually will be won in this country, eventually, by the largest majority of Muslims are not going to pick up bombs and try to undermine the country. But, you know, even if it's 1% of 3 million, that 30,000 potential terrorists running around in the country? Still quite worrisome. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. MichaelSavage.com will show you not only the sickos of San Francisco, who nobody will stand up to, but also what you can do in your own mind, your child's mind, for your own health, for your own sanity on a daily basis. And I invite you to peruse my website. Portland, Oregon. Charles on KXL. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, Mike. I listen to you every day and agree with you on a lot of things. But on that Venezuelan alcohol, whiskey, you have to understand these are Indian people. You know? And Native American people have this produced alcohol that destroys them. And I understand why he wants to...
Well, sir, slow down. Venezuelans are not Indian people. Venezuelans are a mixture of Europeans and of some indigenous peoples who may be of Indian stock. There is no question about it. He is not cracking down on alcohol in Venezuela in order to help those of native blood. He is doing it because he's hanging around with a fanatic from Iran called Ahmadinejad, who is a Muslim, who is anti-alcohol and things of that nature. What's shocking to me is that a man who is himself immoral would suddenly declare that he's on a moral crusade. It has nothing to do with helping Indians, you know. As a former tank squadron leader, Hugo Chavez also enjoys getting behind the wheel of a Venezuelan-made Jeep, which he did in August with Hollywood moron Sean Penn in tow. You hear this? Now, why would Sean Penn, a rich boy who grew up with a communist Hollywood father, be enamored of dictators, left-wing dictators? He liked any dictator he has been to, he liked. He understood Ahmadinejad. He liked Saddam Hussein, and now he likes Chavez. Is there a psychiatrist in the audience who could explain the possible psychological deficit of this actor, Sean Penn, and why he is drawn to and seems to be in favor of dictatorships? I'll be right back.
I came here looking for a great country. I found a great country. I've found great hospitality. I would be more specific than all of this, but I'm also here as a journalist, and so
all right, let's stop. That's the strange Sean Penn, kissing the boots, licking the boots of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. He's not found a dictator that he is not in love with. It's amazing to me that he gets away with this, how he can tell one big lie after another, and he still works in Hollywood. But then again, they live in fantasy. That's what they specialize in. I understand that people in the arts have to be fantasists to be good performers. I do understand that, trust me. But how in the world they can delude themselves like this and think that Chavez is a fair-minded man who's out for his people rather than a craven tinpot dictator is astonishing to me. That's why I asked for a caller who might be a therapist to explain to me why the attraction for dictators by so many leftists in the United States of America. Now, Sean Penn's not alone on this. Many of the Hollywood biggies who are extremely liberal, who want bigger and bigger government and want more and more centralized control of the people, are attracted to dictators. And of course, that answers my own question. They are, in essence, crypto fascists, as I've always known. Mary, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you. Sean Penn, like a lot of Hollywood personalities, are very narcissistic. And part of the hallmark of a narcissist is that they're very grandiose. They distort reality, which some people would call lying. They tend to fear abandonment. They have very hollow centers, and so they present an outward shell that is very grandiose and very awesome for other people. But the way they maintain this is that they mirror off of other people.
So, in other words, when they're around a dictator who is so sure of himself, they feel powerful, they're empowered by his power?
Exactly. They mirror. In other words, they...
You are good. Miss Doctor, you are good. You're a good therapist. I want to see you.
They tend to like...
You don't even laugh at my jokes. Stop it. You're supposed to laugh once in a while. Don't you have a sense of humor?
Yes, I do.
What kind of therapist are you?
Business. I'm a master's-level psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist.
But you're really good. No, you have defined for me what in some ways I sensed intuitively, but I didn't, let us say, elucidate as clearly as you did beautifully. Mary, please stay on the line. You know what I want you to do? Two things. I want you to give the guys your email address so I can communicate with you, and I'm going to send you a gift. I'm going to send you a copy of my DVD, Freedom of Speech Award, because... You're the kind of reason that people listen to this show. I'm good at what I do. In fact, nobody can touch me in talk radio. You want to talk about grandiose? I'm not grandiose. I'm a realist. I'm the best talk show host in the United States of America. But I think my callers are the best in the business. I truly think that I attract the best callers in the country. And that's what makes it such a great show. And so on the way out this hour, I want to play some Pantera because I'm in Florida. And I know that you're in Florida. Florida, 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 Florida. It is the Savage Nation! Welcome to the Savage Nation!
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Any idea what's going to happen to this country if Hillary Clinton gets into office? With the vicious attacks they've launched on me, if Hillary comes to power, do you think for a moment they'll stop there? I don't think so. They'll start with me in talk radio, and before long, anyone who opposes them, even those who think they're liberals, will be silenced. First, they came for Michael Savage, and you did not speak out because you were not a conservative. Then they came for the Republicans, and you did not speak out because you were not a Republican. Then they came for you, and there was no one left to speak out for you. Don't let this become your fate. Don't let this become the fate of our nation. Know your enemy. Listen to the voice of the enemy within.
I only wish that we'd had this active and fighting a blogosphere about 15 years ago, because we have, certainly suffered over the last years from a real imbalance in the political world in our country. But we are righting that balance, or lifting that balance, I'm not sure. Certainly better prepared and more focused on, taking our arguments and making them effective and disseminating them widely and really putting together a network in the blogosphere, in a lot of the new progressive infrastructure, institutions that I helped to start and support, like Media Matters and Center for American Progress. We're beginning to match what I had said for years was the advantage of the other side.
Bill Clinton, the worst president in American history, a man who sold out on national security, a man who killed innocent men, women, and children in Waco, Texas, a man who killed thousands of innocent Serbian civilians in order to get Monica Lewinsky off the headline, was suddenly turned into this aw shucks kind of guy who really wasn't that much different than most conservatives, that they were all pulling for the same thing. Well, let me remind you of something. On April 19th, 1993, Bill Clinton gassed and burned to death 86 Seventh-day Adventists. There were children in that church at the Branch Davidian compound in Waco, Texas. There were children there, and Janet Sterno should be in an orange jumpsuit for life for overseeing the assault upon that church down there in Waco, Texas. Now, the death of 80 or so poor Americans, black and white, young and old, who were incinerated and gassed because they didn't listen to Bill Clinton and Janet Sterno, is really chump change compared to what Clinton did to the Serbian people. He teamed up with the socialists at NATO, mainly Javier Solano, the socialist leader of Spain, and the other socialists in Europe, to mercilessly bomb the civilian infrastructure of the former Yugoslavia. Now, he did not target the military. I know you don't want to hear this, but I'm going to tell you what he did, because you're not going to hear it from Fox or CNN or ABC or CBS or NBC. But you're going to hear it on the Savage Nation. He took our airplanes, and he had them repainted with NATO markings, and they bombed Belgrade, Yugoslavia. Old men who had fought the Nazis in Yugoslavia in World War II and rescued our airmen looked up with tears in their eyes and said the last time they had seen Belgrade being bombed was when Hitler released his Stuka bombers on Belgrade in 1941. Are you proud of the legacy? Are you happy with the fact that this little quiet man from Hope, the little gray-haired saxophone-playing good man Clinton did this? He bombed homes, trains, schools, power stations, hospitals, and TV stations. 60% of NATO targets were civilian. This is according to Edward S. Herman in December of 1999. 60% of the targets of Bill Clinton and his socialist buddies
were civilian, including 33 hospitals, 344 schools, as well as 144 major industrial plants and a large petrochemical plant, whose bombing by Bill Clinton caused a pollution catastrophe that is still being felt today. John Pilger wrote that the list of civilian targets by Bill Clinton included, quote, houses, hotels, libraries, youth centers, theaters, museums, churches, and 14th century monasteries that were on the World Heritage List. Farms were bombed and their crops set afire. But I'll tell you something else I remember. Bill Clinton bombed every bridge over the Danube River. Now, unto itself, that means nothing to you. Do you know that to this day there's not one photograph of the bombing of the bridges over the Danube River? Not one archival photo was ever released of the bombing that Bill Clinton conducted against the Serbian civilian population. I challenge you to find one picture of the damage that Bill Clinton did to the Serbian civilian infrastructure. Now, according to Human Rights Watch, over 500 Serbian civilians were killed in 37,465 bombing sorties over a period of 78 days. They were the worst 78 days of my life in radio because I couldn't believe what I was watching. The main reason is that this was a big lie, the reason our men in the Air Force were used as, in a way, I'm sorry to tell you, mercenaries. They were the Hessians of our time. Our American Air Force was turned into a mercenary force for Bill Clinton and his NATO buddies and his socialist friends, primarily to make Europe safe for an invasion by Muslims from Albania, number one. But it also coincidentally was important to Bill Clinton because they needed to gin up a fake war in order to drive Monica Lewinsky off the headlines. And if you remember, a movie was made about it, mocking the very thing he was doing, and it was called Wag the Dog. This was an entirely a Wag the Dog war. The entire war was a Wag the Dog war. And I'll go a step further. You say, well, what about the 800,000 ethnic Albanians who were driven from their homes? They were driven from their homes when the NATO bombs started to fall. That's when the humanitarian crisis originated. There are other aspects of Bill Clinton's real legacy. I don't expect you to want to relive the entire 8 years of the reign of terror of the Clinton gang, but the travel office scandal was one. The use of the FBI files collected by the White House, an employee who was never hired by anyone. There was no record of where campaign money came from. There was no record of where U.S. military technology went. There was no record of whether national security was endangered as a result. There were reprisals against the Resolution Trust Corporation investigators. There were the arrest of the critics. There were frivolous lawsuits by administration officials to silence their critics. There was the IRS audits of political opponents. There was a politicized Justice Department under the worst terrorist in the history of the department, Janet Sterno. There were payments to Webster Hubble. There was the Justice Department's attempts to block independent counsel Smoltz's investigations. There was the Rose Law Firm files, which were under subpoena, which disappeared and mysteriously reappeared in Hillary's office. There was the Secret Healthcare Task Force in violation of federal law. There was the use of government assets and personnel to address various personal scandals. Nobody knows what happened to Vince Foster's and Ron Brown's files following their deaths. There was the alleged sale of seats on Commerce Department trade missions. There was John Wong's activities in the Commerce Department and his contacts with former Lippo employers and possibly the Chinese government. There were threats and attacks against independent counsel Kenneth Starr. First of all, you got to remember Bill Clinton was impeached. Don't ever forget that. The man was impeached by the United States Congress. He wasn't maybe impeached. He was impeached, damn it. Here's why I'm pissed off. Judgment, and this is from the Constitution of the United States of America. Judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than removal from office and disqualification. Listen to this. Disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. But the party convicted shall be nevertheless be liable and subject to indictments, trial, judgment, and punishment according to law. But the point is, the man was impeached. Bill Clinton was impeached. And it said he should be disqualified to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. You want to whitewash Bill Clinton? Good luck to you.
Savage.
The so-called liberals are on the attack. They've been trying to destroy me, Michael Savage, by smearing me and distorting what I've said. They're trying to destroy talk radio. They're trying to get me fired. But I don't think they're going to succeed because you're too smart for them. You are too smart for them. Not a single prominent liberal has come forward this week to say that the soulless devils on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors did the right thing. When my staff called Nancy Pelosi's office, she had no comment. This is because they realized that if they ran on a platform of silencing Michael Savage and talk radio, if they actually came out in the open and said what they all believe in their evil socialist hearts, that nobody in America should have a right to free speech except for them, then they wouldn't stand a chance at getting the stone-hearted communist Hillary Clinton into office. There was once a time when liberals would have come forward to defend me, but that time has passed. And that is why I want to play the speech I gave when accepting the Freedom of Speech Award earlier this year. I want you to hear just how far we've fallen and what the state of liberalism is today. It's on my DVD, but I'm going to play it for you free right now. I remember the 1960s when true liberals used to say, I may disagree with you, but I would fight to the death your right to say it. When have you last heard a liberal say, oh, I may disagree with conservative talk radio, but I would fight to the death their right to say what they believe in? I don't hear that anymore. What instead I hear is their threats to national security. That was stated on the congressional floor by Congressman Hinchey. He says, I'm a threat to national security, and he's trying to pass the so-called fairness doctrine to close down freedom of speech. Is that liberalism? Liberals used to say, I may disagree with you, Michael Savage, but I would fight to the death your right to say it. That's what this country has been about from the day it was founded. That's the trail of tears and the trail of blood that led to the freedoms that we enjoy in this country today. And we cannot permit a few small-minded martinets who don't even know that they're inhabiting the souls of dictatorships in Congress right now to deny us our freedom of speech. Where are the true good liberals? This is one of my inspirations as well. It's a Philippine mahogany model of a World War II icon. It's the B-29. The Enola Gay, that concluded the war in the Pacific. I'll let you figure out why I look at this wonderful machine. Ahmadinejad, the new Hitler of our time, the so-called president of Iran, has declared his desire to create a new Holocaust against the Jews. And yet we see prominent lawyers and journalists, some of Jewish descent, in our own country, denying the Islamo-fascist connection. Worse, even defending Islamic murderers, for example, in Guantanamo, who would gladly cut their throats and decapitate them while chanting to Allah. Out of fear of offending the SS of today, they refuse to talk about the codification of hatred for Jews, Israel, the United States, and our way of life. That's freedom of speech, is it not? Or what is freedom of speech? Why do these intellectuals deny their own freedom of speech to defend the freedom to preach hatred by their enemies? Daniel Pearl, the Wall Street Journal journalist, who was executed and decapitated by the Islamofascists, was forced to say, I am a Jew. My mother was a Jew. Before Islamic murderers cut off his head while chanting to Allah. Yet that was never played on the major media. Shall I play Daniel Pearl's blood-curdling screams as he is dying, as his head is being severed? Should this be played in the United States of America so we know who our enemy is? That's freedom of speech. I want to show America, I want everyone in this audience listening to me to understand what it's like living here. Geographically, it's the most beautiful place in the world. You've got everything from Zone 1, meaning the High Sierra, to Zone 10 down in the Los Angeles, San Diego area in terms of geographics, what you can grow. You can grow tropical plants in the Zone 10. You can grow Arctic plants in Zone 1. We've got the Bay, we've got the High Sierras, we've got the most beautiful microclimates you can imagine from valley to valley. It's superb. It's a gorgeous place to live. And because of this, it's been a very welcoming place. And what happens when you have a welcoming place is people will take advantage of good nature. I'm going to give you an example of what it's like to live here. I was driving into the radio station in my new car. It is an SUV. I was on a tight road going downtown, two lanes in each direction, with a line of parked cars. On my right lane, there was a bike rider, a feminist, with a smirk on her face, cutting in and out of cars, trying to make everyone upset because she was better than everybody. You can just see it on her smirky face. She pulls on the right side of me as I'm stopped in traffic and tries to pass and grates against my car. I hear her handlebars hit my new car. I roll the window down. I say, what the hell are you doing? She looks at me with a smirk and says, oh, I fell. I didn't hurt your car. And she pedals off. Now, she knows if I had chased her down, which I wanted to do, and grabbed her wrist to call the police, I would have been arrested for assault and battery. I couldn't win. So I let this enemy within scratch my car, knowing I was powerless. I am powerless because we are living in a state of social anarchy in San Francisco, where the weaklings and the perverts have the politicians in their pockets. And those of us who earn a living and follow the rules are outside the law. This is exactly what the problem is in San Francisco. It's exactly why I live here, to show you what's coming to a community near you unless you stop the weaklings and the perverts. What would you have done if you were me and that snotty feminist on the bicycle had scratched your new car and said, oops, I didn't hurt your car. I just fell. Knowing that if I grabbed her by the neck and called for the police, I'd be arrested. Knowing that if I tried to detain her, what would it matter? She has money, that wretch. So you see, they know how to play the game. But what's going to happen to her is that one dark night she's going to pick the wrong lunatic. Now, you got to ask yourself, who raises people to not understand the danger they're putting themselves in by giving fingers to cars on little roads? Who raises them? You drive around in California on the weekend here on country roads as I do. You cannot believe you see guys four abreast on a two-lane road. You know they all got there by car. You know that they drove their bicycle to that country road by car. Every one of them is a liberal scum. You can look at them. You can feel it. It's a certain instinct you have. It's like a sixth sense. You just know that they're lawyers, 99% lawyers, and their behinds are in the air in extra tight pants, looking like baboons or jesters in jester costumes, and you're honking. You want to get around them, and they give you the finger. What's going to happen to them is one fine Saturday, a drunk who's just come from the doctor who said you have terminal cancer or your little girl is dying or your wife just died, he's going to see red and he's going to run four bicyclists over. They don't understand that. You know why? Because they didn't grow up in the streets of the Bronx. They don't understand there are consequences to provocative behavior. I stated that we have candidates running for office who stand for nothing. We have no idea what Giuliani stands for. We don't know what Romney stands for. We hardly understand what Hillary stands for or Obama, but we know how much they have taken in fundraising by the week. They're sort of like bad movies. And so the Hillary movie took in more money last week than the Giuliani movie. The week before, the Obama movie took in more money than the Giuliani movie. The week before that, the Romney movie took in more money than the Obama movie. This week, the Hillary movie has moved up on the hit parade. We don't know what the Hillary movie is about. We don't know what the Romney movie is about. We don't know what the Obama movie is about. We don't know what the Giuliani movie is about. But we know how much money they took in. That's because we have the dumbest generation writing articles that we've ever seen in our life. In the last 10 years, the journalism schools have puked out the dumbest people in American journalistic history. It wasn't always like this. In fact, journalism was once a noble profession. After World War II, for example, teaching, journalism, professions like that were filled with former veterans. They were great professions. But over time, more particularly over the last 8 to 10 years with sonic booms in some industries, generally those with C and below averages became journalists. Consequently, they can't even review a movie, let alone review a candidate. It's very succinct what I just said to you. It's as simple as that. Very, very simple. Very, very clear. So for the first hour, I was talking about the alleged, or let's say the would-be, acquisition of 3Com Bain Capital's company, one of their companies, 3Com Bain Capital's company, with a Chinese Communist military front group. And it is going to be put before CFIUS for review. Unfortunately, CFIUS is run by the very same people who are going to make money off the deal. The Treasury Secretary, for example, Henry Paulson, was former chairman and CEO of Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is arranging the deal. So this is a repeat of the Dubai ports deal. So here we sit. So people say to me, what do you get so excited about? You can't do anything about it. No, I can't do anything about anything. But you stopped the Dubai ports deal. You stopped amnesty for illegal aliens. Three or four major events in this country's history were altered by this radio show, meaning you. Individually, we're nothing. Collectively, we have all the power in the world. So you say, well, the Republicans are going to defend us. Well, Mitt Romney is the former CEO of Bain Company, the management consulting firm. Ask Mitt Romney, who is now running for the presidency, whether he thinks that the sale of 3Com Bain Capital to a Chinese Communist military front group is good for American national security. See what he says. Maybe he would agree with me that it shouldn't be done. Maybe he has nothing to do with it. Maybe he's opposed to it. I kind of doubt it. Something in me tells me he'd give you that gosh be gosh, how to win friends and influence people smile that they all give. That, oh my gosh, that's a good thing for America. Oh be gosh, my gosh, that's such good business. Why, Michael, I got to tell you, that's such osh be gosh, so good that our good friends in China are going to help us out here. Well, maybe that's what he'll say. I don't know what he's going to say. Maybe he, too, wants to see the conservative talk radio stop, because asking questions can be very dangerous in a democracy. You see, that's what you don't want. You don't want questions. You only want the predigested answers created by the men who, well, look, I'm tired of this already. I swear to God. Houston, Texas. Scott, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, you are 100% correct about the threat that this presents to America. I work in network security. I work with security all day long. And it's well known that China has a large and active hacker group. And they're well-funded, very well-funded. And some people, insiders, think that they're actually funded by U.S. companies.
Oh, that's good. Oh, yeah. I understand the communist Chinese enemy actually gives rewards to those who can hack best into American computers at the Defense Department.
Yes, yes. And they're trying to get corporate secrets. They're trying to get intellectual property that they can resell or use to essentially wage a war against us in the capitalist market.
Well, the Chinese have always been known for copying, not for creating, for at least 1,000 years. They're very good at copying, not at creating. That we well know. But now they're going to hack into Defense Department computers?
Well, they can hack. I mean,
well, how can this be stopped? We only have a handful of Republicans who are trying to get an analysis of the military implications. So far, not one Democrat has said a word. Are you aware of that, Scott?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay, we got Representative Thaddeus McCotter of Michigan. We got Dana Rohrabach of California. And they are basically sort of alone on this. Governmental officials concerned about the deal have doubts about a Treasury review because Mr. Paulson is a former executive at Goldman Sachs, which is advising 3Com on the deal. White House Chief of Staff Joshua Bolton, also was a Goldman Sachs executive. Now, what chance do we as Americans have if the largest or one of the largest investment banks in the world continues to place their executives in the government? And what is good for Goldman Sachs, therefore, is good for America? Is that necessarily true?
Either that, or they don't really understand the threat.
They're many of them don't understand the threat. That would be my guess. I think many of them are so pigeonholed into tunnel vision that they don't even understand the big picture. And after all, Admiral Fallon, who was the commander of the U.S. Navy, I believe, went over to China last year and opened up all of our ships to the communist Chinese to visit. And when he went over there, they gave him access to nothing. History lesson. Russian leprechaun supported Arab control of ports. I actually was researching on WorldNet Daily last night, and I stumbled on this article from February 06. It says right-wing radio TV guys split on control of U.S. ports. Limbaugh and O'Reilly favor the deal while Savage opposes it. I couldn't believe this. I had forgotten that Limbaugh and O'Reilly favored the transfer of the control of six major U.S. ports to a state-sponsored company based in the United Arab Emirates. Limbaugh said at the time, I have been a profile and courage on this story. You know, Rush, I got to tell you, you make me proud to believe that somebody could be such a con man like you and get away with it for so long. He took the side of the United Arab Emirates and buying out the U.S. ports because he is a Bushbot. That is why the National Republican Party is going to bat for Rush Limbaugh, Well, they should in the case because the Democrats are attacking him. They should support him. But that's not the point. The reason they're not mentioning me is that I'm not a friend of the Republican Party. I'm an independent. I don't belong to either party. So therefore, I represent the American people. That is, I represent the largest body of American people who exist today. That is the unidentified voter. You control the outcome of the next election. Make no mistake about it. You control the outcome of the next election. Not the Bushbots, not the Democrats, not the Republicans. And before I take this last break here in this hour, I got to say this. When have you ever seen an election being held so far in advance because fewer and fewer people believe in any of the political structure? And so they've decided to run the dog and pony show for even longer to try to whip up an interest in this fraud. And number two, when have you ever seen journalists reporting not what the people who are running for office believe or stand for, but how much money they raised last week? So therefore, they report numbers such as Hillary raised 11, Obama only raised 6. Therefore, Hillary is better than Obama and she should be the president. Republicans are not raising money. That means that they're not as good. So it doesn't matter what anyone stands for, according to the morons who write these newspaper articles. But now they're reporting raw numbers, like they used to report ratings of movies. Remember when that happened? There used to be movie reviews that people read to decide for themselves whether to go to that movie. Well, since the journalistic profession has collapsed into the gutter, because only C students and below have gone into journalism over the last 10 years or so. In the past, it used to be a very noble profession. But over the last 10 years, only people who couldn't do very much else became journalists. Consequently, they don't even know how to review a movie. They wouldn't know where to begin. So all they do is report the income of the movie over the weekend. So they say Shrek 2 earned $39 million. Not whether it's a piece of garbage designed for a mentally ill person, but that it grossed $39 million. And then the next movie, which might be a fabulous film from every point of view of art, only made $11 million, so it's not as good a movie. Since they can't review the movie, all they do is tell you how much money it grossed. Same thing with the politicians. They don't know what they stand for, nor do they care what they stand for. It just shows you Hillary grossed $30 million or $9 million. And now it's by the week they're telling you how much they grossed. Like a movie! They've turned the candidates into a movie. And each candidate now has to worry about Monday's report from the box office. Not whether the movie is good or whether their politics are good, but how much money they raised. Have you ever seen a time like this in your life? Never have I. And I'm older than you are. In fact, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm the senior statesman of talk radio in the United States of America. I am the elder statesman of talk radio in the United States of America. I may sound younger than some of the guys, but I'm older by about 20 years. You may not know that. I'm not going to hide my age. I'm going to wear my age with pride because I have wisdom. And I'm going to use my wisdom. And I'm going to tell you that I have been around longer than most of them. And I may see things that they don't see. And I'm going to tell you right now that I am the senior broadcaster in talk radio. There is nobody of my age in this business. Nobody. I'm talking about with a daily show. And you may say, well, where does he get the energy to do this? Most guys his age already retired or walking around with a cane or they have a transfusion tree and they're on 93 pills. And they've given up and they've disappeared. Well, let me tell you something, boys and girls. I have only just begun to fight, and I'll be back. Savage. With us right now is Jeffrey Lord of the American Spectator, who wrote an interesting article entitled When Nancy Met Harry. I was not shocked to read this. I live in San Francisco. I was not shocked to read that during the so-called gay pride parade, you can't even call it the gay pride parade anymore. There's so many attachments to it, you have to spell them all out. There were a number of marchers proudly marching with the stud bar, the leather pride people, and members of the whips and chains groups, including the mayor, and including Nancy Pelosi, the congresswoman. Welcome to the show, Jeffrey Lord. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me on.
So in the old days, a politician would be seen kissing children. Now they're seen kissing the rings of leather pride people. Is that it?
Well, you live in San Francisco, Michael. I've been to San Francisco. It's a great town. I think it's a terrific place. And I'll tell you something. Having been in politics, I'm willing always to allow politicians a certain amount of leeway in terms of their constituents and the people they represent. She's got a sizable gay community. I understand this. But we're not talking about, frankly, being gay or straight here, where this boils down to two things: basic morality, and then secondarily politics. And if there were a parade and there was somebody who was being honored who was well known for molesting little girls, do you think she'd march in that parade?
So I know where you're coming from, because I read your entire article, Mr. Lord. And the man honored in that pride parade in the year 2001 was a man named Harry Hay. Who was Harry Hay?
Harry Hay, and I confess, living over here on the right coast, I did not know. And being straight, I didn't know. And I've done a little research here, and he was apparently quite the guy, one of the in terms of the gay movement, and he was is considered to be one of the founders of the Equal Rights for Gays movement. He was apparently had a relationship of some sort with Will Gear, the actor who played Grandpa Walton. I must say that threw me for a loop.
And wasn't he also connected to the Communist Party in the 1930s?
Right. He was very much a leftist. He was born in England when he began life. He came to this country. He was very much the leftist, active in the Communist Party. And he was an old-fashioned leftist. And what interested me was, in terms of the family.
So thus far, Harry Hay, old-line, grandfatherly, gay, member of the Communist Party. But that's not shocking. Many of the people in these movements are anti-everything that's considered correct. What is it about Harry Hay that particularly got your attention?
Well, he was quite the promoter of NAMBLA, the North American Man-Boy Love Association, in which this is a group that advocates older men having sex with underage boys. I mean, and let me say that word again, boys. I mean, you and I...
All right, so Harry Hay, who was the leader of the gay pride parade in which Nancy Pelosi marched, you can't say she knew any of this, though, can you?
Well, as I certainly understand it, he was a fairly well-known figure in San Francisco. Certainly that's the way he was presented in the San Francisco Chronicle. He was profiled at the end of his life in the New York Times, or presented in the New York Times. He got glowing obits in the San Francisco Chronicle.
Well, of course, the San Francisco Chronicle and New York Times would only publish such glowing commentary about a communist homosexual member of NAMBLA. That would be their poster boy. But in your article, you said Harry said the following in 1983 at NYU. He said, if the parents and friends of gays are truly friends of gays, they would know from their gay kids that the relationship with an older man is precisely what 13, 14, and 15-year-old kids need more than anything else in the world, close quote. So Harry Hay was a vigorous and well-known advocate of older men having sex with young boys. In other words, he was a fearless advocate for Congressman Mark Foley's behavior. He was held up as a role model in this parade. And all the politicians of San Francisco, including Nancy Pelosi, were marching proudly with him.
And they had to know. I mean, they had to know this. I mean, this guy was extremely well-known in the San Francisco community and beyond. I mean, that the statement that he made that I have quoted there came when he had been invited to a forum in New York City back in at NYU back in 1983. I mean, this was a fairly well-known guy in this community. And I've worked for a member of Congress and the U.S. Senate and the president. You know your constituency. I cannot possibly believe that she did not know who he was. He'd been the grand marshal of this parade on one occasion. I mean, why would she not
know? I can guarantee you that the politicians of San Francisco would more proudly march with NAMBLA and the members of the Communist Party than they would with the Paul Revere Society or any members of a border control group in America, to show you how twisted their minds are and how out of touch they are with the average American. But you're saying that she never issued a warning statement to parents that they were bringing their kids to a parade where this child molester, Mr. Hay, was one of the featured attractions. And you think she should have done that. Is that correct?
Absolutely. My question for her now is, will she apologize? I mean, she did this quite knowingly. I mean, I seriously think she didn't give this a moment's thought, because this is perfectly routine to her. And that is what's most troubling here. And so I'd like to know, Is she going to apologize? Is she prepared to issue an apology right this minute? She says that what Mr. Foley did was abhorrent behavior. Well, it was abhorrent behavior. But he's got nothing on Harry Hay here. And she was willing to appear in a parade and not say a single word, not utter a single syllable.
So you're actually, I mean, come on, this is going to be considered a stretch, and it's guilt by association. She'll say she didn't know he was there. But she was, in fact, marching in a parade that was not a generalized parade. It was not a mixture of Boy Scouts and NAMBLA members. It was called the San Francisco Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, whatever, Pride Celebration. And the leader of this parade, or the man who was considered the leader of it all, or the granddaddy, was this man named Harry Hay, communist 1930s, and a member of NAMBLA, a proud member of Men and Boys Having Sex. You're saying she should have known that.
Technically, he was not a member, but he was definitely a supporter of it. And what's interesting to me, the Chronicle did not say that. I had to find this out from NAMBLA, which is very
proud. But are you surprised that Phil Bronstein would omit the connection to NAMBLA?
No, I'm not. But the fact that they did it says something about that, that they omitted it, says something right there, doesn't it?
Yeah. So you want Nancy Pelosi to apologize or disavow her connection to NAMBLA?
Sure. I mean, I think that if we're
well, yeah. The truth is, all these wise guys like David Gregory who pretend they're tough reporters. The next time Pelosi gives a press conference, Gregory ought to say, "Miss Pelosi, do you or do you not support the premises of NAMBLA?" Anyway, when Nancy met Harry, American Spectator by Jeffrey Lord, and we learned about Harry Hay, Nancy Pelosi, NAMBLA, and all sorts of other fascinating tidbits that you're not going to read on ABC News tonight, are you?
No, you certainly are not.
We're sort of the alternative media in America, aren't we? We see things in our own way.
That is right. That is right.
Well, thanks for being on the show, Mr. Lord. I surely appreciate. No relationship to the Lord on the Hawaii 5-0, are you?
No, he was the rich one, and he's also now the dead one. So I prefer my dad.
Jack Lord. I met him once when I was in Hawaii years ago. He did die, huh? He wasn't an old guy, was he?
Well, he died, I'd say, about 10 years ago. I often get asked that question, I got to tell you.
Aloha, and thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.